A very, very big welcome to the final call of the Anxiety Summit Season 2, Nutritional Approaches for Eliminating Anxiety. What a fabulous 2 weeks this has been. I know you recognize my voice by now. I'm your happy and calm host, Trudy Scott. I'm a food mood expert, certified nutritionist, and author of the Anti-Anxiety Food Solution. And I'm happy because it's the 13th day of the summit as I record this, and as of now, we have close to 15,000 people signed up for the summit. It's so powerful, and it's just heartwarming to see the response to these amazing speakers and these fabulous topics. And even though we've got so many people signed up, I'm cool, and I'm calm, and I'm collected because anxiety is no longer a part of my life anymore. And I want it to be no part in your life as well. You can feel calm, you can feel happy, and you do not have to have anxiety. And I hope you have got that out of this summit this time. I want to also say a very big thank you for joining us and for all the amazing feedback, the great questions, the comments. It's just been fantastic. I love hearing from you, and I love all the amazing questions. And in case you're not aware, there is a blog for each speaker and topic. And what I've done now is gathered all the speaker topic blogs into one blog called the Anxiety Summit Season 2 Speakers and Topics. And I'll share that link that goes with this interview. And this way you'll be able to find all the speakers and all the topics easily and all their blog posts. And there are these have snippets from the interviews. It's got links to research that we talked about and links to speaker books and their gifts. You can use the blogs to comment. I know a lot of you are already doing that. You can share your experiences and ask questions. And it's just a wonderful way for me to communicate with you and for you to ask questions and share your experiences. And I really, really appreciate everything that you guys are doing on the blog and on the Facebook, on the replay page, and also on the Facebook page, Trudy Scott Anti-Anxiety Food Solution. I read everything, but as you can imagine, with so many people signed up for the summit, I'm a little bit behind with responding to some of the comments on the blog. But you will get an answer from me, or you'll get an answer from the speaker. And I'm getting a lot of the speakers who are doing a great job of coming and actually responding to some of your questions. So thank you. Keep it up. And I appreciate the interaction and the fact that you guys are listening and you've got great questions. Just keep in mind that responses will be general because we can't give specific nutritional advice because we don't know what your health concerns are, what else might be going on for you. But as you can see from the responses, you are getting some really good information with posting on the blog. And I just love connecting with everyone on the speaker blogs and on Facebook. It's just really great. It feels like I'm actually talking to you instead of just me doing all the talking and interviewing all the experts. And I just want to commend you for being on the summit and taking charge of your health. And thank you for empowering yourself. And thank you for taking this information back to your kids, to your spouses and families, to your friends, and to your patients and clients if you are here on behalf of patients and clients. And I wanted to share some of the feedback that we've had because it's just been lovely. And when you hear some of these, hopefully it'll give you some hope. As someone actually said, the summit gives me hope, a determination to look closely at my diet, and determined to chuck the drugs in a controlled way, of course. She said, this is my Christmas gift to myself. And that's great. We need to give ourselves this gift of healing. Someone else said, I'm thrilled at the prospect of healing my mind and body and having a fresh start in life. That's just wonderful. Someone else said, the interviews have inspired and informed me to a new level. Yay, that's what we want to do. We want to inspire, we want to inform, and we want to empower. And then this is a lovely one. Your summit made me excited and happy to wake up every morning. It gave me a reason and support by checking my email to listen to all these interviews with me knowing that I am not alone in this. Thank you. No, you're not alone in this. There's many people with similar issues, and there are answers. And as you'll see from the guest expert interviews and from some of the comments on the blog, a lot of the experts have experienced some of the things that we're talking about themselves, which is why they are doing what they're doing. I had my own anxiety. I had panic attacks. This is why I am so passionate about sharing this. So you're not alone, And I'm just glad that you're excited and you're motivated to learn and to be here and to take this information and implement it. And then this is a great comment from someone. As a physician, it's a shame we're not taught all of this beautiful knowledge in medical school. It's never too late, so thanks a million. So no, it's not too late, and it's wonderful that we are reaching physicians who are open-minded enough to incorporate some of this amazing food and nutrient information into their practices. So thank you for saying that as well. So the purpose of this wrap-up call is to address some areas that didn't make it into the interviews. And the title is Eggs, Broths, Sprouts, Almond Flour, Questions and What to Do Next. And I created that title not knowing what would come up during the summit and what other research might show up from when we started the summit till when we ended it. So we're going to go through those topics, but we're also going to talk about a few other things that have come up because I like to be fluid and I like to address things that have come up and I like to share exciting information that's come up, and I've certainly got some of that to share. So when we get to the actual topic of the title, I'm going to share about eggs being a superfood and some amazing research on choline for better mood and for less anxiety. We'll talk about sprouts, curcumin as well, I'm adding that in. And I also want to give pemmican and carob a mention as well. And I'm going to make a brief mention of broths, but we covered this pretty nicely in Dr. Lowe's Primal Nutrition interview, so I'm not going to go into broths in too much detail today. I also want to talk a little bit about why you may want to reconsider almond flour for baking. And then I'm going to go through some common questions and some guidelines, and then we'll end with some great quotes. Before we start with this planned agenda, I've just got some current news that I want to share on the food mood front. As I said, these new things come up, and there's some news that have come up since we started 2 weeks ago. And this just shows how quickly things are happening in this arena. So much new research on a daily basis. And exciting things, and some pretty funky things as well. So I'm going to start with two funky things, the two pieces of bad news. Well, they're not really bad, but just a little bit horrifying and a little bit scary. And then I'm going to share three pieces of really cool and good news. In fact, it's really uplifting and encouraging news. So let's start with the crazy or the bad news or the funky news. This is from an article that ran on November the 7th, and it was in the New York Times, and the title was USDA Approves Modified Potato. And I'm going to read some from the article. A potato genetically engineered to reduce the amounts of a potentially harmful ingredient in French fries and potato chips has been approved for commercial planting, the Department of Agriculture announced on Friday. The potato's DNA has been altered so that less of a chemical called acrylamide, which is suspected of causing cancer in people, is produced when the potato is fried. The new potato also resists bruising, a characteristic long sought by potato growers and processors for financial reasons. And this is just crazy. I'll share the link to the article so you can read the whole thing. But we are trying to stop genetic engineering. We had Jeffrey Smith do a great talk on the summit on genetic engineering. And now we have the USDA approving something else. And unfortunately, while the summit was happening, Colorado voters rejected an initiative to label genetically engineered foods. And the vote in Oregon failed by a slim margin. The good news is that in Maui and Molokai in Hawaii, voters narrowly approved an initiative prohibiting the use of all GE seeds until another public hearing assessment is completed. So on one front, we're trying to stop it, and then on the other front, we're getting new genetically modified foods being created. And it's not a very good thing, but I would just say let's just skip the French fries and the junk food, and then we're not going to need these kind of potatoes. And then I wanted to share this other piece of crazy news. This was a Huffington Post blog that announces that Doritos flavored Mountain Dew is real. Can you believe it? PepsiCo is concocting a version of its Mountain Dew soda flavored to taste like cheesy Dorito chips, the company stated Friday. The soda and snack giant said it tested the new flavor, dubbed Doritos, on college students. I'm just flummoxed. I can't believe it. And unfortunately, it's going to be consumed by college students who really don't need to be consuming stuff like this. So just thought I'd share that one, and I'll share the link to the article so you can read that as well. So other than that funky news, there is some pretty good news. So let me just share some really good things that I've seen in the news lately. This is a quote from a blog post on a site, a website called wellandgood.com, and it was published November the 5th, so this was after the summit started. And this is just so encouraging to read something like this. This winter, if you see a vibrant woman full of energy with glowing skin strolling through the East Village sipping a steaming hot beverage, it may not be coffee. It could be grass-fed beef broth made with bones and infused with ginger. How cool is that? On Monday, renowned chef and hearth owner Marco Canora introduced Brodo, New York City's first takeout window devoted to sippable broths, and he's betting on the fact that people will be intrigued by both the health benefits and the taste. He said, I want to create a new hot beverage, a whole new category. I just say, yay, healthy fast food at last. So I'll share a link to that article on the blog post as well so you can read up on that. And if you're in New York City visiting or if you live there, I'd love you to check it out and let us know what you think and report back on the blog. We would love to hear what it's like. And maybe we can get a chain of these beautiful broth fast food places in other cities. It sounds absolutely wonderful. And I actually spoke on Dr. Josh Axe's Natural Cure Summit earlier this year, and he's got a great broth recipe that I'll share on the blog so you can make your own if you don't have access to something like that. And then the second piece of encouraging news is a wonderful urban farming article that was published in the LA Times on November the 12th. And this is what this article says. At the Jonathan Club downtown, not everyone took it well when an infrequently used paddle tennis court on the fifth floor roof was sacrificed to gem lettuce, Swiss chard, and microgreens. Executive chef Jason McLean, of course, was thrilled. His father, a retired landscape architect, flew in from Alabama to build the garden, installing neat rows of galvanized horse troughs in which vegetables and herbs now grow. The dinner menu lists our homegrown items, broccolini, baby carrots, blueberries, figs, snap peas, and heirloom tomatoes. So here we've got big city living, and we've got a urban garden on the top, on the fifth floor of a club in downtown LA, which I think is so cool. We are seeing urban gardens popping up in various different cities. The picture of this one is pretty cool, and I'll share that article as well so you can take a look at it. And then the third piece of good news is a new TEDx talk that's doing the rounds in the online world and on social media. I came across it actually from the ISPNR Facebook page, which is the organization that Felice Jacka is one of the founders of, International Society for Nutritional Research. And this is a TEDx talk by Julia Rutledge. She's a PhD researcher from New Zealand. And the topic of her talk is this, the surprisingly dramatic role of nutrition in mental health. And she did this talk in TEDx. And this is how she opens the talk. What I'm going to share today may sound as radical as hand washing sounded to a mid-19th century doctor, and yet it's equally scientific. It's the simple idea that optimizing nutrition is a safe and viable way to avoid, treat, or lessen mental illness. Nutrition matters. Poor nutrition is a significant and modifiable risk factor for the development of mental illness. This is I think it's about a 20-minute talk. It's really fantastic. If you read my newsletter on Friday, I sent a the video out. I will make sure I include it on this blog as well. So if you didn't get my newsletter, you can watch it here. I'm going to share just a few other gems from the talk because it was really, really fantastic. She says, a well-nourished body and brain is better able to withstand ongoing stress. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about this at the end when I answer some questions that came in about PTSD. If you have, if you are exposed to something that could potentially cause PTSD, if you've got a well-nourished body and brain, you're less prone to be affected by that trauma. So having this well-nourished body and brain is just so important for us to be able to handle things that may cause trauma in our lives or just day-to-day stresses, as we heard from Dr. Alan Christensen in the adrenal talk. Something else she said is when people get well by nourishing their brain and their body, they get well in all areas. They see improved sleep. They see mood stabilization, reduction in anxiety, and less need for cigarettes, cannabis, and alcohol. And this is because when our brain chemistry is balanced, we have less of a need to self-medicate with alcohol or with sugar or with cigarettes to help us to feel normal or to feel good. And then what she also said is my research and other research from around the world shows 60 to 70% of people respond to micronutrients. This just shows how powerful this intervention is. So micronutrients are basically vitamins and minerals over and above food changes. A lot of her research has been using micronutrients, but she was sharing how important these are, plus how important food changes are. And she's saying what we should do is focus on food and lifestyle changes first, including exercise, then incorporate therapy, and listen to this. She says save medications for when these approaches don't work. So medications are the last resort, and I just love it. I think it's fabulous. So hats off to Julia Rutledge and to all the other great food mood researchers out there. As you've gathered from this summit, and if you've been in my community for a while and read my blog posts and read my newsletter, I'm all about sharing the research, and there is so much amazing research out there, and we just appreciate the researchers so much because it just adds credibility to this food mood field and incorporating food into treatment of care and to making sure that it's part of treatment. Sorry, standard of care and making sure that it's part of treatment. And so we appreciate you. We appreciate you, Julia, and we appreciate all the researchers out there. Okay, so let's get to the topics that I said I'd talk about. Firstly, let's talk about eggs. And I'd really like to propose that eggs are actually a superfood. Really, we hear about these superfoods, and I think eggs are superfood. And I want to share some of the research on choline, which is found in eggs, and show how it is better, it improves mood, and it actually helps reduce anxiety as well. So let's just talk about eggs in general. There's this a very interesting animal study that was published in August this year, August 2014, and the title of the study is Orally Administered Whole Egg Demonstrates Antidepressant-like Effects in the Forced Swimming Test on Rats. Wow, that's pretty powerful. And what they found is that they suggested that this whole egg may be an excellent food for preventing and alleviating the conditions of major depression. And yes, this is an animal study, but this is how a lot of these studies start. They start out being animal studies and then they move into human studies. And we've seen so much research about the benefits of protein. And as I'm going to share with you in a minute, protein is a huge component of egg, obviously. It's a huge benefit of egg. It's such a beautiful, complete protein that it's going to give you all those benefits of all those amazing amino acids. And then this is another study that was published in May 2014, and this was talking about how skipping breakfast can increase depression, anxiety, and stress levels, and how eggs can be part of a healthy breakfast. So this was called a cross-sectional investigation of depressive, anxiety, and stress symptoms and health behavior participation in Australian university students. And what they found is that for males, depressive symptoms were associated with skipping breakfast and poor sleep quality. And for females, depressive symptoms were associated with skipping breakfast, inadequate vigorous physical activity, and short or long sleep hours. So it was interesting that the sleep was different for both men and women. But the big thing was that depressive symptoms were associated with skipping breakfast, and when you included eggs at breakfast, there was an improvement. Now, these are studies that are looking at depression. We know that there's often an overlap between anxiety and depression, so we can extrapolate for some of these studies and assume that they may apply to anxiety as well. So I said eggs are so nutritious, and I want to just say this. Eggs are one of the most nutritious foods on earth, and let me give you some reasons why. For a start, they contain B vitamins like folate, vitamin B5, vitamin B12, selenium, vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin K, vitamin B6. Are you hearing some nutrients here that are beneficial for mood? Certainly, vitamin B5 is very beneficial for the adrenals, pantothenic acid, B12, common deficiency when it comes to mood problems. We see a lot of research on vitamin D and mental health, and I'm going to share some of that in a second. Vitamin B6, calcium, and zinc, all nutrients that are important for mental health. And, of course, if they're pastured eggs, meaning they run around in the pastures eating bugs, they are going to have more vitamin A and more vitamin E. As I mentioned, good source of protein. So one egg contains about 6 grams of protein, and they contain all the essential amino acids in the right ratios. So our bodies are well equipped to make full use of the protein in them. They're also a good source of lutein and zeaxanthin, which is so important for eye health. And I mentioned the vitamin A, also important for eye health. These nutrients help with cataracts and prevention of macular degeneration. We know that eggs contain cholesterol, and we don't want to be worried about this because we now know that cholesterol in the diet doesn't necessarily raise cholesterol in the blood. And what happens is the liver actually produces cholesterol, and when we eat more foods with cholesterol, the liver just produces less cholesterol. And there are about 30% of the population where eggs mildly raise total cholesterol. But remember, we're more worried about low cholesterol anyway. And for most people, eggs don't affect cholesterol. And I'll share some research that shows that. We even see some studies that show eggs lower triglycerides and they raise HDL. And they're also very satiating. So you'll eat an egg and you'll feel fuller, which is great because this is going to help with blood sugar control. Of course, the protein definitely helps with the blood sugar control as well. Now, the other thing about eggs is that they are an excellent source of choline. One egg contains more than 100 milligrams of choline. This is a water-soluble essential nutrient, and it's usually grouped within the B-complex vitamins. And choline is part of every cell in our bodies. It promotes brain health, nervous system function. It's important in fetal development of the brain and the spinal cord. And it's also needed for methylation. And we heard about methylation from Dr. Ben Lynch. And it's important for homocysteine metabolism. And there was a 2007 paper that found that only 10% of adults in the USA are getting enough choline in their diets. 90% of adults in the US are not getting enough choline in their diets, and there are a lot of people that are not eating eggs. So let me just share some of the research on choline and how it can actually be related to anxiety levels, directly related to anxiety levels. So this is a paper that was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. It was actually published in 2009. It's a large population-based study, and this is what it says. We studied a sample of 5,918 And this included both sexes and two age groups of 46 to 49 and 70 to 74-year-olds who had valid information on plasma choline concentrations and symptoms of anxiety and depression, measured by the hospital anxiety and depression scale. The lowest choline quintile was significantly associated with high anxiety levels. They didn't actually find any association between plasma choline and depression symptoms, but they did find that those with the lowest levels of plasma choline had the highest anxiety levels. And then there's another paper that was actually just published October 2014, and this was published in Behavioral Brain Research. And they suggest that high choline intake during early development can prevent or dramatically reduce deficits in social behavior and anxiety in an autistic mouse model. Very, very powerful. So I bet the next question that you're asking is, how many eggs can I safely eat? We are seeing more and more research showing that eggs are not the bad guys anymore and that they are safe to eat and they actually should be part of a healthy diet. And there was an article on WebMD published just I think it was last month, and it was entitled Egg-Rich Diet Not Harmful in Type 2 Diabetes. And although this is about type 2 diabetes, I think we can extrapolate it pretty much across the board. But they were discussing the results of a new study that was presented at the European Association for the Study of Diabetes in September. And it was presented by Nicholas Fuller. He's a PhD from the Boden Institute of Clinical Trials Unit at the University of Sydney in Australia. I must say, a lot of research on good food studies coming out of Australia. So hats off to all the Australian researchers. But what they found is this, that they suggest that eating two eggs per day, 6 days a week, can be a safe part of a healthy diet for people with type 2 diabetes. That's 12 eggs a week. I just say yeah to that. I love eggs. It's one of my favorite foods. They also said eggs don't have a bad effect on cholesterol levels in people with type 2 diabetes. And those in the high egg group showed a trend towards HDL improvement. They also found that eating this egg-rich diet for 3 months was linked to better appetite control and may also provide a greater sense of feeling full. And listen to this. The high egg group also reported more enjoyment of foods, less boredom, and more satisfaction with the diet. And I just love that finding. I think that's great because we want to really enjoy our food. I blogged about this last month, and I'll share this blog with some of the links to the study and some other comments on the blog for this particular call. And there have been some articles talking about concerns about this compound called TMAO and the increased risk of heart disease. If you have read about that and you're concerned about it, do read the comments in the blog that I'm going to share with you about eggs being okay, because there was a very recent study in September of this year that says additional study is needed to both confirm the association between TMAO and atherosclerosis and identify factors, microbiotic and genetic, that influence the generation of TMAO before policy and medical recommendations are made that suggest reduced dietary choline intake. So basically they're saying we don't know enough to say that we should be reducing dietary choline intake, in other words, reducing egg intake. It seems that genetic factors, your gut microbiome, can definitely have an impact. So the jury's still out, and you'll see quite a lot of people have blogged about it. Chris Kresser is one particular practitioner who's blogged quite a bit about the fact that we shouldn't really be concerned about this. And we should be incorporating eggs and choline-rich foods like red meat into our diets. Really, really beneficial for mood and overall health. Nothing to be concerned about. going back to the basics, going back to how our grandparents ate, going back to recognizing real foods. It was quite interesting when I was doing the research for the egg article, I corresponded with a researcher and doctor from a university in Florida, and they surveyed people to see how many eggs that they typically ate in a week. And there were some people that didn't, that only ate one egg a month. Some people would eat one egg every 2 weeks. And there were very few people that ate more than three or four eggs a week. And she talked to the colleagues at the hospital, and most of the doctors in the hospital were still saying eggs are not healthy. So it's going to be a slow process to get this information down and to get people starting to eat eggs again. But again, you know, as with any food, the quality is really important. So we want to be definitely going with organic, because then they're not going to be fed, GMO corn or pesticide-laden soy. But the ideal is to get eggs from pastured chickens, so chickens that are running around in the field. And you'll see a very big difference. The yolk will be bright orange, and they're going to be much more nutrient-dense and much more healthy. So if you can get a chicken pen and have your own chickens, or get from a local farmer, that's going to be ideal. So let's just talk about some more superfoods, because there are some other great foods that I want to talk about today, because I just think they are just great things to start thinking about incorporating into your diet, and they're pretty simple things. So the first one I want to talk about is sprouts. And you heard Tom Maltaire, he calls himself the broccoli whisperer, which I think is lovely, and he talked about this compound called sulforaphane. And this is an organosulfur compound that's been shown to have anti-cancer and antimicrobial properties. We get it from eating cruciferous vegetables such as broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, cabbage. And broccoli sprouts are a particularly good source. Now, keep in mind, sulforaphane doesn't exist independently in plants. It's actually created when we eat these plants. So there's a specific enzymatic process that creates these compounds when we chew the foods, and they are broken down. So this is why chewing our food is so important. We heard this from Dr. Lowe in her Primal Nutrition interview. We want to really chew our food. And this is really important when it comes to getting this beautiful compound called sulforaphane. No chewing means no sulforaphane. And if you're not sure how to spell that, I'm going to spell that for you. It will be on the blog as well, of course, but it's S-U-L-F-O-R-A-P-H-A-N-E, sulforaphane. It's a lovely word, like psychoneuroimmunology. It's just a really cool-sounding word, another one of my favorite words. So there is a study that was published in October this year, which is specifically looking at sulforaphane treatment of autism spectrum disorder. And I bring this up just because we've heard from Julie Matthews talking about people on the spectrum being canaries in the coal mine, and if we can help them, we can help other people. And also a lot of people with autism spectrum disorders also have anxiety, so we could expect to see some improvements in that area as well. But this was a placebo-controlled, double-blind, randomized trial looking at young men aged 13 to 27. They had moderate to severe autism spectrum disorder, and they received this phytochemical sulforaphane, which was derived from broccoli sprout extracts, and then there was a group that just received the placebo. But after 18 weeks, they saw an improvement in social interaction, an improvement in abnormal behavior, and an improvement in verbal communication. When they stopped the sulforaphane, the symptoms went back to their pre-treatment scores. So when they were on it, they saw improvements. When they stopped, they went back to how they were before. And what the study says is that this dietary sulforaphane, it's recognized to be low toxicity, and it was selected for its capacity to reverse abnormalities that have been associated with ASD, including oxidative stress, depressed glutathione synthesis, reduced mitochondrial function, oxidated oxidative phosphorylation, increased lipid peroxidation, and neuroinflammation. Now, some of these things are factors when it comes to mood disorders. So you could see how this could help with mood disorders. We've certainly heard about neuroinflammation, oxidative stress. We heard about glutathione in the mercury talk, mitochondrial function. So all of these are really important factors, and the sulforaphane compound made a difference. So I encourage you to grow your own sprouts at home. It's super easy to do. You can start out with just a glass jar, and you soak your seeds overnight, and then you sprout them. You tip the jar on its side. You pour the water out from the soaked seeds and you let it sit somewhere and you will start to get your sprouts and then you can eat them. If you find that it really works and you really like it, then you can get some pretty fancy sprouting equipment. And this to me is local, homegrown, in season, and it doesn't get better than this. And I've actually done quite a few, taught quite a few workshops on how to grow your own sprouts. And it's super easy. You just want to make sure that you get good quality seeds, of course, so you are getting good quality sprouts. Again, quality is really important with everything. Then the next one that I want to talk about is curcumin. And this is a natural anti-inflammatory, and it's the principal curcuminoid derived from the spice turmeric. And it influences a lot of mechanisms associated with major depression, mainly the immune and inflammatory pathways, the HPA axis, in other words, the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. And in a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study, 56 individuals with major depressive disorder were treated with 500 milligrams of curcumin twice a day for 8 weeks. And then what they found is that from 4 to 8 weeks, curcumin was significantly more effective than a placebo in improving several mood-related symptoms. This is just one of a number of studies showing mood benefits of curcumin. And there's studies showing benefits for both anxiety and depression. And we heard from Dr. Brogan in her talk on psychoneuroimmunology. And she talked extensively about inflammation, and she shared how curcumin is one of her favorite nutrients. We were hoping to get into a little bit more detail on curcumin, but we had so much other good stuff to talk on everything else that we didn't get to curcumin. But she did mention that it's one of her favorite nutrients. And, of course, I would recommend cooking with turmeric as well. You can add the spiced turmeric into a stir fry. You could add it into a ground beef recipe. You could add it into curry. You can add it into soups, and it'll give it that beautiful color, and you're getting those benefits as well. For therapeutic levels, though, you may need the supplement. And I would think about curcumin as a supplement, certainly if someone had high levels of C-reactive protein. That's a marker of inflammation. We heard about that in Dr. Brogan's talk. And we also heard about it in Dr. Lowe's talk. When you've got high C-reactive protein, it can show that you have inflammation, often very correlated with depression and anxiety. And curcumin is lovely for doing that. And it's also, as I said, a lot of research showing it actually helps with improving anxiety and depression symptoms as well as lowering that inflammation. Then the next thing I want to talk about is pemmican, and this is one of my favorite foods as well. I call them the energy bars of the 21st century, and they've got this divine melt-in-your-mouth like chocolate texture. And the ingredients are, wait for it, beef fat, grass-fed beef jerky, sea salt, and then they make the company that I buy it from makes it with a hint of cranberry as well. They were used by Native Americans, they were used by the early traders in the USA, and they were even used by the Boers in South Africa, which I found pretty interesting. It comes in a bar, it does need to be kept in the freezer, but it does travel pretty well. I take it when I do trips, And, you know, once I get to my destination, I'll put it in the freezer. But it does travel pretty well, which is why the Native Americans and the early traders and the Boers used this while they were out in the bush. So when I travel, eggs, boiled eggs, pemmican, and grass-fed beef jerky or bison jerky, and a can of sardines are my standard travel food. And I'll share a blog where I talk about, you know, all the food that I take when I travel, because it's a pretty big list, as well as the ones that I've mentioned. You know, nuts and seeds may be on there, fruit might be on there. So there's quite a few other things that you might want to take when you are traveling and you don't want to be exposed to the junk food that you might find in airports or that you may not be able to get when you get there. And then you want to have food when you're traveling so you aren't caught high and dry and you end up with low blood sugar. And I get my pemmican and jerky from a company called US Wellness Meats. I'll share a link to their website. They do deliver. They are, you know, have humane treatment of their animals, and all their food is grass-fed, really, really good source. If you can get it locally at a farmer's market, that's great. And you can actually make jerky yourself. We call it biltong in South Africa, and it's pretty easy to make. And you can make pemmican as well. I've made biltong or jerky. I've not ever actually made pemmican. It's just so convenient just to buy it from US Wellness Meat. So I'll share that information for you as well. And then I wanted to talk about carob. And I want to talk about carob because of the whole coffee, caffeine, chocolate issue. And carob is just a really good alternative to coffee or hot chocolate because it doesn't contain caffeine. And it's got this chocolate-like flavor, so a lot of people really enjoy it for that. And it's something that I recommend to my clients who may be looking for a healthy alternative and who can't tolerate coffee or chocolate, because there are a subset of those who have anxiety and are just more prone to the anxiety-provoking effects of caffeine. And we heard from Dr. Christensen in the adrenal talk how caffeine is a stress for the adrenals, so I just don't think anyone should be drinking coffee. And he actually talked about how caffeine can raise blood sugar just like soda can, just like sugar can. So it's really something that we want to get out of our diets. And if we can add in carob instead, how fantastic is that? There was actually a 2002 study that found that carob may actually have calming effects. It's also full of antioxidants. It contains this polyphenol called gallic acid, which has been shown to help with metabolic syndrome. That's spelled G-A-L-L-I-C. It's got chemoprotective properties, and it also helps with digestion. And it's yummy. It really is really yummy. I've got a lovely recipe that I'll share with you. I call it Carob Cinnamon Delight a la Trudy. And it's got, you would put about 3/4 cup of boiling water, a tablespoon of carob powder, 1/4 teaspoon of cinnamon, and then some coconut milk, full fat, or some fresh cream if you can tolerate dairy. And it's just yummy, really, really nice, very filling and very yummy. And then, of course, if you're looking for other coffee alternatives, there's herbal teas such as licorice, lemon ginger, mint, tulsi is great, and rooibos is also fabulous. In season one, we heard about the stress-reducing effects of rooibos from Professor Amanda Swart. Rooibos is a South African herbal tea. Rooibos also stands for red bush, and it's fantastic. And we learned from her that it's good to let the tea bag, if you're using tea bag, or the if you're using the leaves, but to let them soak for a long time. I used to just flash my tea bag in the cup, and now I leave mine in there and let it brew for a while, and then you're getting all the benefits of the rooibos tea. And then some other coffee substitutes are Dandy Blend, which is a dandelion compound, dandelion formula, or Ticino, which is a pretty nice coffee substitute if you want to get off the coffee. Then the next thing I want to talk about is why you may want to reconsider almond flour for baking. And this becomes an issue if you've switched to a paleo or caveman diet and you're grain-free and you are baking breads or muffins or cookies or treats with nut flours like almond flour. And I see it a lot. I see it in a lot of the paleo recipe books, you know, 20 to 30 pages dedicated to baked goods. And and they're all using nut flours. And I've really got some concerns. Firstly, a cup of almond flour contains about 90 almonds. There's no way you would sit down and eat 90 whole almonds. You know, it's just way too many almonds. But the concerns related to anxiety are this. Nuts are high in copper, and using large amounts like this in baking can actually raise copper and lower your zinc. And in that way, it can contribute to increased anxiety, because what we have is a zinc-copper balance, and when we've got high copper, we're going to have lower zinc. And we often find low zinc when someone has anxiety, certainly if you have pyroluria, the social anxiety condition, you could have lower zinc. And in this high consumption of nuts could make things worse. The other issue is that nuts are high in oxalates. All nuts are high in oxalates. And you heard about this in Julie Matthews' talk. Certain people are affected by oxalates. The pain issues are a big one, but anxiety can be an effect as well. And, you know, what we're doing is replacing one bad thing with another bad thing. And I think we just need to be a little bit careful about it. And I know Julie Matthews talks about this as well. And I think I'm starting to see more and more people talking about it. But the other aspect of this is that cavemen and cavewomen didn't indulge in loads of baked goodies, and even if they're so-called healthy treats made with honey and maple syrup. So I just want to say, if you are finding you need that treat, or you're self-medicating with these so-called healthy treats, these baked goods, then I recommend looking into the possibility that candida may be an issue. And you heard Dr. Michael Parsons talk about candida and how that can cause out-of-control sugar cravings, or possibly that it's a brain chemical imbalance. And you heard me talk about the targeted individual amino acids and how they can help with those cravings, that feeling of being deprived, eating for comfort, eating for reward. And remember that the aminos can help with the mood, so they can eliminate the anxiety and the depression and the worry and the ruminating thoughts, but they're also very, very powerful for stopping those cravings. So keep those things in mind if you're finding that you are needing these treats all the time. And, you know, going back to the whole paleo recipe books, there's just way too many dessert recipes. For an occasional baked treat, I would recommend coconut flour instead. And then go for good old delicious fresh fruit. That should satisfy your sweet taste. You could, you know, spruce it up by doing baked apples with some cinnamon and nuts and maybe a little bit of maple syrup. You could do fruit salad with cream or maybe ice cream, and it would need to be a good quality ice cream. Another great fruit recipe is bananas cooked in butter and then sprinkled with coconut flakes. And that is just a lovely fruit dessert that hasn't got any added sugar or any honey or anything added to it. So now I just want to go through some common questions that have come up. And I'm going to tie these back to some generalities that I want to try and convey here. Let's go through the questions and then I'll show you how they all tie together. So I had a few people asking about PTSD. One woman posted on the blog saying, I've got a son who's suffering from severe PTSD from serving in the military. Could this information help him? And yes, it could help. But the big thing to remember is that we all biochemically unique, and our anxiety, or if we've got PTSD symptoms, it could be caused by one or more factors. So whether or not you have PTSD, or whether you have anxiety, or whether you've got social anxiety, or whether you've got panic attacks, you need to figure out what are the biochemical factors that may be affecting you and may be causing your symptoms. So I'm going to give you a few factors specific to PTSD, because what I did is I went and looked up some research specifically for PTSD so I could share it, because there's no one answer. You know, different things can affect different people differently. But one factor that could make PTSD worse could be low EPA, which is an omega-3 fatty acid. And this particular study suggested that lower EPA levels are associated with the severity of clinical symptoms in PTSD. That doesn't mean that that's the case for everyone. It just means that it may be the case for you, and you need to look into this and then address that if that's the case for you. Another factor could be low levels of vitamin D, and there was a study talking about worse PTSD symptoms when you've got lower levels of vitamin D. Doesn't necessarily mean everyone is going to have low vitamin D if they've got PTSD, but it may be that it's going to make you more prone to those symptoms. There was another study that showed cortisol and DHEA could be a factor in PTSD. And of course, anyone with anxiety or social anxiety or any kind of anxiety symptoms, it could definitely be the adrenals, and we heard about that from Dr. Alan Christensen. So all of these things could be different depending on each person and what's going on for them at the time. There's many different symptoms that could be a factor, or it could just be one of them, and addressing one could make a difference, or maybe you've got to address all of them. And then there was actually a new study that came out that I saw published just this week, and this study found a connection between PTSD and low HDL and high triglycerides. So again, we've got this other factor that may be making PTSD symptoms worse. So I'm sharing these examples for PTSD because I've got the studies, but if you have got anxiety, it could be cortisol, it could be gluten, it could be diet, it could be low blood sugar. It could be all of the above. It could be the brain chemicals. It may mean that you need GABA or serotonin support. So you've got to find out what the issue is for you. And then this goes to the point that one problem may result in different symptoms. For example, if someone has an issue with gluten, they may have constipation or diarrhea. Someone else may have anxiety and depression. Someone else may have arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis, big connection between rheumatoid arthritis and gluten. And we heard this in the Dr. Tom O'Brien talk. So one particular problem food can cause different symptoms in different people. So it's a matter of figuring out what might be going on for you. And there are two other studies that have just come out that illustrate this. There was a study that was just published yesterday saying that major depressive disorder should be reconceptualized as an infectious disease. This new article suggests that major depression may result from parasitic, bacterial, or viral infection. Now, we didn't have anyone talk specifically on parasites or bacterial imbalance in the gut or viral infection specifically, but we could do a whole hour on this talk, and certainly parasites, it could be a factor. It doesn't necessarily mean that everyone who has major depression has parasites or some kind of bacterial imbalance, but it could be a factor and it needs to be looked at. And then I'd mentioned vitamin D earlier, and there's this new study linking inflammation and low vitamin D with suicide attempts. So again, here we're seeing inflammation coming up, and we're seeing an increased incidence of suicide attempts. So it's a matter of figuring out what could be going on for you. So again, if you've got low vitamin D, you may be suicidal, or you may be more prone to PTSD, or you may have poor bone health, or you may have increased risk of cancer or heart disease, and it can affect different people differently. Another question that I had is, does all of this work for men? And yes, it absolutely does, except obviously the PMS comments and the perimenopausal and the menopausal comments, but this works equally well for men. And then what about kids? Yes, again, it does work for kids. Kids often respond really quickly to a lot of the changes. I say with kids, the big thing is get them off sugar, get them off gluten, get them off colors, and get them eating protein at breakfast. That is the biggest thing that you can do. And a lot of kids turn around very quickly. I have had success with the amino acids with kids. You'd want to start on very low doses and just go up very slowly. You could do full spectrum lamps with kids to help raise serotonin levels. So, and getting them outside, getting them some exercise, and just getting them eating real whole food. That can just make such a big difference. So with all of these, we want to, you know, make the food changes, we want to address nutritional deficiencies, we want to address hormone imbalances, and then brain chemical imbalances. I also had a few questions around social anxiety, And I mentioned it briefly in my amino acids interview, but this was covered in great depth in my Power Lawyer interview in season one. So if you've got this inherited social anxiety condition called Power Lawyer, vitamin B6, evening primrose oil, and zinc can literally turn you into a social butterfly. So if you are wanting to find out more about Power Lawyer, do check out my session in season one. So here are a few guidelines as you navigate all of this, because I've seen some comments and some questions that led me to give you some guidelines. Now, everyone is in a different place. Some people, this is a lot of it's old hat and you're just learning some new things. For some people, this is totally new. But I just want to give you a few guidelines here. I want to say please don't latch onto a supplement that you've heard about in the summit, like I've heard about curcumin or I've heard about GABA and this is the solution for me. It may work for you. It may not work for you. It depends on if you need it, if it's going to make a difference. One example is niacinamide. We heard about how successful it's been for Dr. Prasky's patients, and we heard about this in the getting off the medication interview. And I think it's a wonderful B vitamin, and I personally take 1,000 milligrams a day because I've got low histamine. But someone commented on the blog saying her husband's anxiety got worse when the acupuncturist had him add niacinamide. So it may not be for you. We've also got to think that it may be the reverse effect. Maybe you are taking too much. And remember, the reverse effect can cause the opposite effect if you are taking too much. The other thing that you want to think about is quality of supplements. This can make a really big difference. I only recommend professional grade supplements that are gluten-free, that are soy-free, that don't contain fillers and colors. And the supplements that I carry in my online store also contain good forms of the various vitamins and minerals, like folate instead of folic acid, and they have good therapeutic amounts of nutrients. So quality, again, keep coming back to quality. We talked about quality food. You want quality supplements. You really get what you pay for. And I didn't have the opportunity to share the amino acid precautions in my amino acid interview, so I'm just going to share them here. And I promised I would share a blog, and I'll make sure that there is a blog post on this. I'm a little bit behind, but you will have a blog post with this information in it. The guidelines are to contact a knowledgeable practitioner if you react to supplements, foods, or medications with unusual or uncomfortable symptoms, if you've got a serious physical illness like cancer, liver, or kidney problems, or an ulcer, if you've got schizophrenia, if you're pregnant or nursing, and if you're taking any medications for mood problems, particularly MAO inhibitors or more than one SSRI. So definitely work with a knowledgeable practitioner. And then precautions for specific amino acids, you would want to consult with a knowledgeable practitioner if you're not sure about this. If you've got an overactive thyroid or Graves' disease, you don't want to be taking tyrosine or DLPA. And remember, I said I don't usually use DLPA, but I'm just going to list this here in case you happen to be looking into DLPA. If you have phenylketonuria, no tyrosine or DLPA. Same with melanoma or high blood pressure or migraine headaches, no tyrosine or DLPA. If you've got low blood pressure, you would want to watch the use of GABA or taurine. Usually you can take it. You just want to make sure it doesn't make you feel worse. If you've got asthma, tryptophan or melatonin can be a problem. If you've got severe depression, melatonin can be a problem. If you have bipolar disorder, tyrosine, DLPA or glutamine can potentially trigger a manic attack. And there is a question around glutamine and cancer. There is some research that shows it's beneficial and some says to avoid it. So just be aware of that one. And then I said, this may be old hat to you and you may be just picking up a few gems in the summit. You may be a total newbie And if you are a total newbie and you're spinning with all this information and you feel more anxious about what you've heard, someone actually posted that, and my heart goes out to you if this is making you feel more anxious, because that's certainly not the intention. Where do you start? So here's some tips for you if you're a total newbie and where to start. Firstly, don't be overwhelmed, and that's easier said than done, but this is how you cannot be overwhelmed. Make some simple changes. So these are the simple changes. Start by eating real whole food. You heard how Dr. Kelly Brogan has her clients do this. Get the GMOs out of your diet. So get all the processed food out of your diet. Get organic food into your diet. Add in some fermented foods like sauerkraut per Judy Matthews and Dr. Ted Diamond. Remove sugar per JJ Virgin's talk. Add in protein at breakfast. This is a big one, just like the eggs that we talked about. Add in some eggs at breakfast and eat to control your blood sugar, per Dr. Alan Christensen. And then consider a gluten-free trial, per Dr. Tom O'Brien. So those are the basic, simple things that you can do. Now, it's a good idea to keep a food mood log while you're doing all of this. It's going to help you see the connection between what you eat and how you feel. I have all my clients do it, whether they're working with me one-on-one, if they're working with me in a group program, they keep a food mood log, and you can see a lot from a food mood log. It's very, very powerful. And this is also going to show you how you feel when you go too long without eating or if you don't have protein at breakfast. It's also going to show you if maybe you go out to eat somewhere and you possibly get exposed to gluten, and then the next day you feel terrible or you feel anxious or you feel depressed. So it's a great way to try and figure out how food may be affecting you. Many people can just make these changes I've mentioned. You know, real food, get off the sugar, get off the gluten, have protein at breakfast, and they can see dramatic improvements in their anxiety and mood and sleep and energy. So you heard us talk about toxins. You heard us talk about mercury. Don't even go there. Just make these basic changes, and you may see some dramatic improvements. And this is why I wrote my book, The Anti-Anxiety Food Solution, in this way. All the simple things first. You know, if you follow the 9 steps in my book or the 9 steps in my program, we focus on the simple things first. Now, that being said, if you are trying to do this and you're having a hard time getting rid of the gluten, or you just can't get rid of the sugar, because you're addicted, or willpower gets the better of you, or you feel deprived. You know, you've got strong willpower and you can give it up, but you just feel deprived. You just feel like you need something. You need that sweetness. This is where the targeted amino acids come into the picture. And if someone's working with me, we'll typically have them make all those changes I talked about, and we will have them do the amino acids at the start. If you're doing this on your own, make those food changes and then come and revisit the amino acids. Or you could start, you know, you could start right away. But I really want to encourage you to make those food changes, those basic changes first, because you can't just take supplements and hope everything's going to be okay. Of course, if you add in the amino acids, the targeted individual amino acids like GABA or serotonin or glutamine or the DPA for that comfort eating, then it's going to help with that overwhelm. It's going to help with the ruminations. It's going to help with that obsessiveness, the anxiety, while you're trying to figure everything else out. You can do it without the aminos, but most people find it easier, and they just love that they feel calmer from day one. And as I said in that first interview, I don't know if I said it in the first interview or maybe I said it in my amino acid talk, that people feel hope right away. You feel hopeful because you feel calmer, and then you can make all these other changes. So I find the amino acids to be very beneficial, but don't necessarily go there first. Of course, you've also got to add in exercise and meditation, getting outside and music and laughter and all these other wonderful things that we've talked about. And then you can start thinking about getting the plastics out of your house, getting the chemicals out of your house, getting good quality cleaning products in your house, looking at your makeup and your cosmetics, looking at benzodiazepines and the nutrient depletions from medications and mercury, and then physical issues that may be causing your anxiety. So think of these about the, you know, things that you're going to look at down the road. And if this is a lot, you know, if you're anxious and you've been dealing with this for a long time, and I've seen this from some of your comments on the blog and on the Facebook page, find someone to work with and guide you, because it's hard to try and figure it out yourself. This could be me. It could be one of the other great speakers I've interviewed, or it could be someone close to where you live. Take the summit information, share it with them, share the research that I've included, and be inspired. Have hope that you'll find the answers and you'll get to be healthy and happy and calm, because you know you really, really, really can feel like this. I just want to say thanks for all the great feedback on the lovely theme song that Amma Jo wrote. I'm so glad that you love it. If you didn't get a copy yet, it's called Top of the World. Be sure to go and download your own copy and enjoy it, so you can feel inspired and you can feel happy and calm. We talked about how beneficial music is, and maybe that's just one element that, you need to think about incorporating. And if you missed my opening interview, I'm just going to read a few lines from Top of the World before we end off here. A new beginning, a brand new day. All my fears are gone away. I feel so calm, so free, so whole. Right now, I'm feeling on top of the world. We are now coming to a close, and I just want to share the ending of Julia Rutledge's TEDx talk, because I just love it. She shares the story of how limes on ships in the 1600s eliminated deaths from scurvy, but that it took 264 years for the British government to mandate the use of citrus on ships. 264 years. She closes with this profound question and challenge. How long will it take us to recognize that suboptimal nutrition is contributing to the epidemic of mental illness? Nutrition matters! Exclamation point. Bravo, Julia. So I am ending with this statement: food and nutrients provide a very powerful approach that can dramatically reduce and very often completely eliminate anxiety, and can totally prevent it in the first place. You don't have to wait 264 years to start making these changes. I see results in my practice on a daily basis. I saw results personally. You heard from all these amazing speakers on the results that they are seeing with their patients. You really can have zero anxiety, truly, truly, truly. And you deserve to feel on top of the world. So thank you once again for joining us for season 2 of the Anxiety Summit. I do hope you'll stay connected, enjoy my newsletter and my blog posts, come and hear me talk at live events. And if you come to a live event and you see me there, do come and say hi. I love to meet people who are in my community. I was at the recent IMMH conference, Integrative Medicine for Mental Health conference, and 3 people that have been reading my newsletter for a year came up and said hi, and it was just wonderful to meet them. I hope you will think about participating in one of my group programs or working with me one-on-one if either of those feel like they're a good fit for you. Enjoy the summits that I share through my newsletter, because I speak in a lot of other great summits that are also sharing great information. Earlier this year, I shared the Hashimoto's Summit. I mentioned the Natural Cure Summit. All great resources for you to learn, expand your knowledge, get healthy, and empower yourself in this journey of healing. And I definitely would love to have you join us season 3 of the Anxiety Summit, which is scheduled for the spring of 2015. And I wish you much joy and peace and calm and optimal health. And, of course, always feeling on top of the world with zero anxiety. This is Trudy Scott signing off.